The Tom Woods Show, episode 1590.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, as you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been spreading some pretty terrible ideas, and she's wrong on just about everything. Well, I've put together the definitive smash of all of it. The Green New Deal, affordable housing so-called, free college, high tax rates. It's in another free ebook, yes, a free ebook called AOC is Wrong, The Upside Down World of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Grab your free copy at aociswrong.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. It's always a pleasure to have Euro-Pacific Capital's Peter Schiff on the show, and I'm delighted to welcome him back. I always solicit questions for Peter from the Supporting Listeners Group, the Tom Woods Show Elite. So that's supportinglisteners.com if you'd like to be part of that group. That's where I get my questions for Peter Schiff. People always have a million things to ask him. So that's where I got the questions for today's episode. Of course, we're going to be talking about the economy and to some extent politics to the extent that it relates to the economy. Peter, welcome back.
Well, Tom, thanks for welcoming me back on your show.
Every time I have you on, I go to my supporting listeners group on Facebook and I say, I'm having Peter Schiff on. Does anybody happen to have a question? And you'll never guess, Peter, they do. They have a whole bunch of them.
Oh.
So I want to make sure and ask you not the same darn ones over and over again, but there's at least one that is kind of perennial that I got to keep asking. I will do later about people who don't have that much money, what they can do. But I want to ask you about, as somebody who's observed a number of economic downturns, and this is something that I've been curious about myself. If we look at a whole bunch of them, can we find a pattern in terms of particular sectors that tend to be least or most affected by recessions? Or is it absolutely unique to each one?
Well, I mean, they're all not going to be exactly the same. But in general, you know, the sectors that benefit most from the boom, you would expect them to suffer most during the bust. So, you know, you look at a lot of the sectors that are particularly interest rate sensitive because they were propped up by having interest rates artificially low. And so when interest rates can no longer sustain those artificially low levels, when they ultimately move up to where the market really needs them to be, then those sectors are going to really experience some big declines. You know, so that could be housing, it could be autos or financials or anywhere where, you know, interest is a big part of the equation. You know, but also, you know, during a recession, people have a lot less discretionary income. So generally, businesses that benefit from discretionary spending would be more heavily impacted by a recession than businesses that are, you know, you're selling things that people are going to buy, whether times are good or bad, things that they need, not just things that they want. Or there are certain types of industries that historically do well. Maybe people drink more alcohol when they're depressed. I don't know. So maybe you're selling certain things, your sales could hold up. But I think that people have to understand the nature of these artificial booms and busts, because it's all being driven by the central banks, by the Fed. And so if you understand that aspect of it, you have a better understanding of how things are going to play out.
In your opinion, whenever the next downturn is, what do you happen to think would be hit hardest? Are there sectors where you'd much rather be than other sectors?
You're talking about it from an investor's perspective?
Yes. Or just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that everything keyed into the U.S. economy is going to suffer. I mean, if you understand the nature of the U.S. economy right now, it's just, you know, a function of people spending borrowed money to buy imported products. And all this is a function of the overvalued dollar and the undervalued interest rates. You know, we're able to borrow that money very cheaply, and then we're able to buy products that were manufactured in other countries. And so ultimately, though, what the Fed is doing to artificially suppress interest rates will ultimately cause the dollar to collapse. And when that happens, the prices of all those goods that people have been buying with borrowed money are going to go way up. And I think our whole economy is going to grind to a halt at some point, because it is on an unsustainable trajectory. And the problem is that when this does happen, when we do have this vicious economic downturn, we've already laid the foundation to blame it on capitalism, on free enterprise, on not enough government, not enough regulation. And so I already know that the solution that we're going to choose following this next crisis is going to be all government. It's going to be pretty much going all in on socialism and pretty much burying capitalism and admitting, okay, we knew it didn't work and now we've learned the lesson the hard way. And so it's really time for the government to completely take over the economy, even though it was government interference in the economy that screwed it up in the first place. The voters won't be able to make that distinction, especially since you've had so many from the Republican side that have claimed massive success over the last few years, that Trump has completely restored America's greatness, that all of the years of economic decay are behind us, and we now have the greatest economic boom in the history of the world, and it's all because of Trump's policies. And that means that when it turns out that that isn't the case, that we actually have the biggest bust that anybody can remember, well, that too will be Trump's fault, and it will be the fault of Trump's policies, which everybody erroneously believes represents a return to capitalism. And so this could be the final nail in the coffin of American capitalism.
I want to go back some years in Peter Schiff history to when the Occupy Wall Street movement was very prominent. And you went out into a massive crowd, no doubt you remember this vividly, holding a sign saying, I am the 1%, let's talk. I have two questions for you about that. One of them is, it seems to me that the political environment has grown so much more ferocious and toxic since then, that if you were to do that today, I'm wondering if you would do it today. You know, would you be assaulted?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. Not that we were that civil back then, but I certainly remember that the discussions that I had in Zuccotti Park were very civil. I mean, at no point, even though I was surrounded by people who disagreed with me, at no point did I ever feel threatened. And it's not like I had bodyguards around me. It was just like a couple of people. I mean, and we were greatly outnumbered. It was a very civil discussion. There were differences of opinion. But yeah, I mean, I think today, you know, there'd be Antifa people there. And I don't even know how many words I would have been able to get out. They probably would have destroyed my sign. They probably would have ripped it up and who knows?
Yeah, no doubt. So now the other question is, can you recall what were some of the major points you were trying to convey to them and, you know, how were they received and what were they saying to you, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, my whole point there was to have some solidarity with the occupiers in that I shared a lot of their concerns about what was going on. And if you recall, at that time, what people were upset about were the bailouts. That's why they wanted to occupy Wall Street, because Wall Street was getting bailed out. And I agreed with them. I was never in favor of any of the bailouts. I wanted all of the banks that levered up too much during the boom to go bust. I wanted investors to lose money. I wanted the free market to work, right? I wanted, you know, bad actors to be punished. I wanted people to lose money. And I wanted the more prudent in the banking industry, and there were some out there, the ones that didn't party with everybody else, I wanted those companies to be able to reap the rewards of having done the right thing. I wanted them to clean up the mess. I wanted those banks to expand. I wanted the good management teams to gobble up the bad ones. Instead, the opposite happened, right? And so I agreed with these guys that what was happening was bad. But what I wanted to point out was that that was not capitalism. See, they were confused. They thought the bailouts were part of capitalism. Yeah, this capitalism doesn't have any bailouts. If you fail, you fail. And so I wanted to point this out. And it was that if you're angry at the bailouts, don't blame the capitalist system. Blame Washington. Blame the Congress. Blame the president. Blame the Federal Reserve. So I said, you guys are occupying the wrong town. You shouldn't be in Washington, in Wall Street. You should be on Pennsylvania Avenue. You should be at Congress, the White House, right? You should be go up to the steps of the Federal Reserve and protest that. That's what I wanted. And that was the message that I was trying to convey. You know, and maybe not even so much to the people who were there, because they may have been too far gone. But I knew that a lot of people would watch the video. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll influence people out there who are watching on YouTube, right? And I think I did make a pretty big impact there because I know millions and millions, over 10 million, who knows how many have seen it. I mean, I finally put the YouTube video up on my own YouTube channel and it's got almost 2 million views. And that was like 5 or 6 years after I did it. And I've seen other people put up copies and get millions of views on top of the millions and millions of views that Reason got and other websites got who put it up, you know, when it was fresh.
All right. Well, I'm going to put those up also, tomwoods.com/1590, where I'll have all the Peter Schiff links for the episode today. Let me jump over to the question that everybody asks every time. And I did get some people kind of asking similar things they all want to know about Peter Schiff and Puerto Rico questions, stuff like that. We've handled a little bit before. I do have a follow-up Puerto Rico question later. But the one I get all the time is, I'm not that wealthy. And it seems like, you know, what Peter does and Euro Pacific Capital does is really geared to people who have, you know, a lot of money to play with. I really don't, but that doesn't mean I don't still also want to protect what I do have. So what does Peter say to somebody who has $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000? What should I be doing? Just holding it in cash? I mean, what should I be doing?
No, absolutely not. I mean, first of all, yes, to have an account directly with me at Euro Pacific Capital, $5,000 or $10,000 is really too small an amount. And the reason it's too small an amount is because of the regulations. I mean, if it was a free market in investment advice and in a broker-dealer, I wouldn't care. I mean, people could open up an account with me with $1,000. The problem is I lose too much money on those accounts because of the compliance costs associated with maintaining it. So, you know, we have higher minimums because it takes a larger account in order for me to be able to charge enough money to just cover the cost of regulations that are required, you know, for the government to not put me out of business. But what you can do if you have $2,500 or more to invest is you can buy any one of my five mutual funds at any discount broker, and they will take small accounts. I mean, you can go to E-Trade or Schwab or Fidelity or a lot of these discount brokers, massive firms that have the economies of scale, and you can go online and you can open up an account and, you know, they'll take $5,000 or, you know, less, and you could buy any one of my funds. I mean, if you're really bullish on gold, I have a gold fund, which is actually one of the best gold funds out there. In fact, it was the best gold fund for the 5 years ended 2018. I got a plaque for that. We lost a little bit of ground in 2019, but not much. We're still 5 stars by Morningstar. And I'm one of the few gold stocks, maybe only 2 or 3, that are actually positive this year. Even though the price of gold is up this year, gold stocks have had a bit of a correction, but my fund has actually continued to go up. But, you know, you could buy my gold fund. I have other more conservative funds. I have an emerging market fund, a value fund, a dividend payer fund, even a short-term foreign government bond fund to just get out of the dollar. So all those mutual funds can be bought anywhere. And so you don't need a lot of money and you can buy them, you know, on a regular basis. Some of these firms, you can, you know, have automatic, you know, investments of small amounts coming out of your paycheck, you know, or your bank account on a recurring basis. So yeah, you don't need a lot of money. Now, if you don't even have the $2,500 necessary to, you know, have, you know, open up an account, if you're lower than that, I mean, you could always go into a local coin shop and buy yourself some silver coins. You know, if you have a extra few hundred dollars, you could buy some, you know, silver quarters or dimes, or just go bet bullion, you know, get a little 1 ounce silver round or a little bar. I mean, silver, you know, it's easy to stock up on silver in small amounts, you know, at your local dealer. You know, and then another thing I even tell people to do, I do think there's going to be a lot of inflation in consumer goods. It really hasn't happened yet. But it seems to me that if you just have a small amount of money, if you have an extra few hundred dollars, I mean, I don't know what you do with it. I mean, obviously, it's hard to put it in the bank. But just go buy stuff. I mean, buy stuff you think you might need. I mean, buy some razor blades. Those things could get really expensive. Who knows? I mean, you know, you always need them. Or buy some other toothpaste or things that aren't going to go bad that you know you're going to buy eventually. You might as well buy it now rather than, you know, hold on to the money that's going to depreciate. You know, consumer goods are going to get more and more expensive in the United States. A lot of consumer goods that people take for granted. You know, you could buy ammunition. I mean, even if you don't have a gun, I mean, somebody's going to need that ammunition. But yeah, I mean, there are real things that you could buy if you don't have a lot of money to invest. But of course, you know, if you have a lot of money to invest, you definitely should be working with me because that means you have a lot to lose. You know, not only can you position yourself to actually profit tremendously, I think, as other people lose money. But you don't want to be one of those other people that are losing money. You know, you want to do what you can to preserve, because if you were smart enough and frugal enough to do the right thing, especially if now you're in your 50s, 60s or higher, and, you know, you've built up a real net worth, and the goal is for that to provide you with a quality lifestyle, you know, for the rest of your life, and you want to have something left over to leave to your children, you know, you need to take action to protect that, because a lot of people are going to lose that. I mean, they're in the wrong assets, they're in the wrong currencies. And, you know, when you have all the debt that we do and it's impossible to repay it, the creditors are going to lose one way or another. Either there's going to be default or there's going to be inflation or some combination of the two. But either way, it's the lenders, the creditors, who are going to get clobbered. And those are the savers, the people that own the bonds, right? The people who bought the treasuries and bought the muni bonds and have the annuities. These are the people that are going to lose money because so many other people bought stuff that they couldn't afford with borrowed money.
Oh, man. I have follow-up things, but I want to try and get to as many questions as possible. With Puerto Rico, most people understand what at least the gist of what the benefits are to relocating there. And you did that some time ago. But I have a question about, how do you weigh the pluses against the minuses? I mean, obviously the pluses come out better or you wouldn't have gone. But you do have hurricanes. You do have the potential of power being out. You do have a heavily indebted government. And for all I know, you have crumbling infrastructure. How does that weigh into your consideration?
Well, first of all, that sounds a lot like plenty of states in the United States that you
could
live in.
Yeah, I know. As I was saying it, I was like, thinking I hear the answer already.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's hard to go someplace where, you know, you don't have any risk of a hurricane or an earthquake or a fire or some type of natural disaster. I mean, that's there. And there's no way to escape debt. I mean, especially, you know, if you're talking about the debt the United States government has, I mean, you know, no matter which state in the union you choose to reside in, you're still on the hook for your share of the national debt. And the U.S. national debt is much bigger than the Puerto Rican debt. And so the thing is, like, if you live in any of the states, not only are you responsible for the debts of your state, you're responsible for the debts of the United States, the federal government. But when you live in Puerto Rico, you're only responsible for the debts of Puerto Rico. You're not also responsible for the U.S. debt, because the U.S. government can't tax you. Right. I mean, we do pay the Social Security tax. So we are on the hook for that, but we don't pay the federal income tax. So to the extent that the enormous debt ultimately results in big increases in the federal income tax, that's not going to impact Puerto Rican residents because we're not paying that tax. So obviously we're not going to pay the increases. But look, you got to live somewhere, you know, and I like the lifestyle down here. The weather is beautiful, so, you know, you can't beat the weather. I mean, I think the coldest day in the history of San Juan since they started keeping records, and this is the coldest temperature, which would include, like, the nighttime, the coldest it's ever gotten was 60 degrees. So, you know, and it's not like it's 100. I mean, it's usually right around 80, either in the mid to upper 70s or the low 80s. I mean, it's just nice weather. There's no humidity at all now. We get some humidity in the summer, but I've lived in southern Florida, and it's less humid here than it is in South Florida. So I like the weather. I like the outdoors. I like water stuff. So, you know, and I've always liked the tropical, not just the climate, but just the way it looks, the palm trees and the ocean and the grass. It looks a lot like Maui here, where I am, if you like Hawaii. So it's a great place to live. It's not that far away if a lot of your family or other friends are on the East Coast, either in the South or the Northeast. They're short flights if you try to make that trip a lot. So it's not bad. And of course, you know, I've met a lot of great people since I've moved here. I mean, one of the things people are like, well, I don't know anybody there. I'm going to be moving someplace I don't know anybody. Yeah, but a lot of other people are doing the exact same thing. And so they want to meet people. So people are going out of their way to make new friends and meet people. So, you know, and a lot of people here are sharing a similar experience. And there's a lot of like-minded people, a lot of free market guys, a lot of libertarians, not all of them. I mean, you'd be surprised at how many liberals from California who voted for Obama, voted for Hillary, but who still moved here to avoid taxes, right? They're there, you know, they're here. But Yeah, you know, I mean, it's great. The kids have a great lifestyle here. The private schools are good. In fact, one of the best things you can do for your kids is move them to Puerto Rico, because not only do they grow up in a great environment here, but they have a much better chance of getting into a good college. You don't have to write a check for $500,000 to get into a school like people were doing. You know, you get a huge advantage applying out of Puerto Rico. You know, that's your zip code. You're Puerto Rican, so. There's a lot to more than not paying taxes. But yeah, I mean, not paying taxes is a huge, huge plus, because my income is effectively twice what it would be if I still lived in Connecticut. And I don't have to do anything differently other than just live here, you know? Yeah. And so there's no easier way to basically double your income. And of course, if, you know, the Democrats win in 2020, taxes are going to go up, and moving to Puerto Rico will basically triple your income. So, you know, the higher the taxes go, the bigger the impact by moving here.
Well, but by the way, on those private schools you mentioned, are they teaching in English though?
Yeah. No, okay. They're English. They teach Spanish as a second language, but all the classes are in English. And of course, even if you're a native Puerto Rican who speaks Spanish at home, I mean, you would want your kids to be proficient in English. I mean, they're American citizens. They can work anywhere in the United States. So it's important that you really speak English well. So even if I was a native Puerto Rican and I spoke Spanish, I would want to send my kid to a school that was taught in English so that they would get really, really good at English, because that's the language that you need to know to succeed in America is English. It's not Spanish. It's nice to know Spanish, but you have to know English. You could get by. I barely speak Spanish, and I get along fine without, you know, in Puerto Rico. But believe me, if I didn't speak English, that'd be a problem. So, you know, you got to do that. But no, the schools cost about a third to a fourth of what they would cost in, you know, New York, Connecticut, where I was living before. Now, of course, I could have sent my kid to public school for nothing. The public schools are good where I live in Connecticut. But a lot of people don't have that option. You live in New York City, you live in like Los Angeles, the public schools stink. So you've got to send your kids to private schools. So if you come here, not only do you double your income, but you can send your kid to private schools, you know, for 25% of what it would cost you to send it to private schools there. And it's a better school, and they're going to get into a much better college.
Yeah, well, I still don't want to do it. You haven't convinced me, but I understand the attraction. And obviously,
why not, Tom? Why don't you want to come down here?
Oh, no, nobody would ever visit me. No one's coming to Puerto Rico to visit me.
I got friends coming for President's Day. People come visit all the time.
Yeah, you got friends with like private jets and helicopters heaven knows what.
No,
right?
JetBlue flies in here. Where do you live, Tom?
I live near Orlando.
Oh, I was just in Orlando. I just got back from Disney World. There's plenty of flights going back and forth between Orlando. I mean, why live in Orlando when you can live here? Why don't you at least come visit me? I got plenty of guest rooms. I'll put you up. Check out the place. You know, I'm going to be building a brand new podcast studio, production studio on my property, where I live here. And it's going to serve a dual purpose, because my wife's in a band down here and she sings and they record. So it's going to be like production for sound recording. But I'm going to have audio, video. I'm going to do my podcast there. So you could use it. I mean, you know, you could do your podcast, right? You know, use my.
It'd be like old times.
Yeah, but you can just come walk right in there. You can live in the neighborhood here in the hood with everybody else. And then, you know, then stop paying taxes. I mean, unless you like paying taxes or, you know.
No, it's obscene what I'm paying. It's not as obscene as what you pay, but it's pretty obscene. But, all right, we're running up against
it. You could come back and forth to Orlando all the time. It's like a 2-hour and 15-minute flight on JetBlue, and they're cheap.
All right, look, I'm not ruling it out. We'll say that. I won't rule it out.
Open invitation whenever you get.
Thank you.
When you get tired of being a serf over there in Orlando, want to come down to the land of freedom.
Thank you, Peter. All right. Well, before I let you go, given that we're pretty much at the end of the Trump term, pretty darn close, what's your overall evaluation? And what would you do in 2020 in terms of voting?
Well, look, I can't vote. That's one of the things that happens when you move to Puerto Rico. You can't vote. If I ever move back to the U.S., I can start voting again. But that's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to miss voting for losers. You know, I voted libertarian many times, which is like not voting at all. But yeah, I can't vote. But as far as my impressions. Look, I'm very disappointed in Trump. I mean, not that I 100% was confident in him when I voted for him. I did vote for him. But, you know, when I voted for him, I really didn't know, right, what he was going to do with his presidency. If he really was going to try to make America great again, drain the swamp, and actually do a lot of unpopular things that career politicians never did, right? Really cut government spending, you know, really tackle the entitlement problem and reform Social Security and Medicare. I mean, do things that politicians wouldn't do, but that statesmen, but that people that actually cared about the country and maybe cared about their place in history, right? So I thought maybe Trump would actually shake things up there and actually, you know, be a game changer. And he didn't do any of that. He just played ball. He continued, you know, to make the swamp deeper. He has a different style, a different, you know, the way he, you know, talks and tweets and the way he conducts himself. You know, the style is different, but the substance is the same. It's just, you know, more big government, more lies, you know. But what's so frustrating is how all the Republicans have just basically fallen into line and are accepting all these lies as truths and repeating them, because Trump is popular because he's saying a lot of good things. If you ever listen to a Trump speech, he says a lot of good things that, you know, a conservative or a libertarian type person, yeah, that's right. You know, I like that stuff. But if you actually look at what Trump is doing, he's simply continuing the policies of Obama, which is a continuation of the really policies of Bush. Government keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Nothing gets cut. The deficits get bigger and bigger. The trade deficits are bigger and bigger. And we continue to rely on the Fed. In fact, one of the things that a lot of people liked about Trump is that he really called out Yellen and Bernanke for artificially stimulating the economy and inflating a stock market bubble. And hey, it's going to be different when I'm president. And that's the reason he didn't want to reappoint Yellen. But of course, the minute he appoints Powell, what does he want Powell to do? Exactly what everybody else did. Cut rates, create more inflation. He says he wants negative interest rates. He loves quantitative easing. He's the biggest fan. He was a critic of quantitative easing when he was a candidate. Now he's advocating it. He wants more of it. You know, he promised to eradicate the debt. You know, now debt doesn't matter. You know, so, and he's managed to convince the Tea Party that debt doesn't matter, that the size of government doesn't matter. He's now the defender of Obamacare. You know, first he wanted to get rid of it. Now he doesn't want any, you know, cuts, because he wants to make sure that anybody with a pre-existing condition can buy insurance at the same rate as somebody who's completely healthy, which means he wants socialized medicine. He doesn't want free market insurance. He wants somebody else to pay your medical bills. But he's defending Social Security. He's defending Medicare. He wants now to have another mandatory leave. He wants to force employees to, you know, be compensated in the form of, you know, leave. Paid leave and all, you know, another big government program. So I'm very disappointed in Trump. And I'm even more disappointed that so many people have fallen for this. That's the frustrating part. And it's playing into the left, because if you haven't noticed, the Democratic Party is the Socialist Party, but now the Republican Party is the Democratic Party. You know, Trump was really a moderate Democrat. That's really what he is. but now he's a conservative Republican. That's how far the pendulum has shifted.
But if it's Trump versus Bernie, you know what everybody's going to say. Well, we cannot allow Bernie. I mean, sure, Obama was pretty bad and, you know, Hillary would have been pretty bad. But Bernie, I mean, even Hillary doesn't like Bernie. Even Obama doesn't like Bernie. I mean, Bernie, you really have to protect yourself against. And I could see somebody saying, but the thing is, the things Bernie could get away with on his own would be like foreign policy and civil liberties, where he's not a complete train wreck, and the rest of his stuff would get blocked in Congress. What do you think of an argument like that?
Well, first of all, you know, a lot of this stuff, even if it gets passed through Congress, hopefully one of the one things that Trump may have accomplished was with his judicial appointments. Because pretty much everything that Sanders wants to do is unconstitutional. And so all we really need is some judges to, you know, strike this stuff down. And so even if Sanders can get some of this stuff through Congress, if it doesn't survive judicial scrutiny, we're saved. The Constitution prevents the stuff. So even if we elect a radical socialist like Sanders, who has this agenda, the Constitution protects us from it if the judges will only enforce it. Because there's no way they're going to be able to amend the Constitution. Like when they wanted to tax income and the Constitution didn't allow for it, they were able to amend the Constitution to get the 16th Amendment. But there's no way they're going to amend it to get the wealth tax or a lot of these other things. So it may not happen. But what I do think, and the similarities that I see between Sanders and Trump, is the same thing that we're saying about Sanders now, they were saying about Trump. Nobody's going to vote for him. I mean, there were a lot of Democrats that were saying, hey, let's register Republican and vote for Trump because he's the candidate we can most easily beat, right? So everybody thought Trump was a joke. Nobody would vote for a reality star who grabs women by the you-know-what, right? I mean, how could we lose? This is our dream that we get to run against Donald Trump. And the dream became a nightmare because Trump won. And what they also said was that, oh, Trump will crash the economy. The stock market's going to crash. Even the Republicans were thinking that the stock market was going to crash if we elected Trump, even though he was promising tax cuts and less regulation. And so people have heard that before, right? They were told everything would collapse if they voted for Trump, and they voted for Trump. And it didn't happen. So, you know, the same thing could happen to Bernie. And I think, you know, when so many people are against Bernie, right, if you are a typical voter who doesn't like the status quo, doesn't like, you know, career politicians, right, and then you see the establishment attacking Bernie Sanders, it's like, well, my enemy's enemy must be my friend, right? If this guy is so disliked by the establishment, if even the Democrats don't like him, then he's got to be my guy. They must not like him for a reason, because they're afraid that he is actually going to drain the swamp, or the Trump's right. He's actually going to take on the special interest that they're protecting, right? So the more the media and the establishment, you know, coalesce around, we got to stop Bernie, the more people want him. Aha, you know, they don't want us to have this great thing, right? Because it's infringing on what they're doing, right? They're getting rich at our expense, and they don't want Sanders to end the party. So I think that, you know, the people who thought Trump couldn't win now think he can't lose. And I think they're underestimating the appeal of the Sanders message. I mean, after all, this guy is promising complete forgiveness of all student debt. Think about how many people under the age probably of 35 that still have $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 of student debt. I mean, why not vote to get rid of that, right? I mean, that's a pretty powerful incentive. Hey, I voted for Sanders, and if he wins, I get 50 grand. I get 100 grand. I mean, how do you out-promise that?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, as we wrap up, let me ask you to make your maybe 2-minute pitch for Euro-Pacific Capital, what you can do for some of the folks out there.
Well, obviously, I think regardless of the outcome of this election, I think the next president is going to be a democratic socialist, whether it's Bernie Sanders in 2021 or, you know, AOC in 2025, because we're going to have another economic collapse. We're going to have not just a recession, it's going to be a collapse. And it's either going to start before this election or after. But I think the odds that we get all the way through the Trump term without this recession starting are very, very slim. And so it's going to be blamed on the Republicans and Trump, and we're going to flip over to the Democrats. And the Democrats are clearly controlled by the socialists, and it will be even more socialistic, you know, in 2024 than it is now. I mean, that is just the more and more 16-year-olds will be 19 and they'll be voting. And of course, this is an army of socialists, right? Just queued up. And the older people who know how bad socialism is, well, they're dying off, right? So, you know, we're losing this game. And so with that in mind, where are the socialists going to get all the money to provide all this free stuff, right? They're not going to get it by taxing the rich. You know, yeah, they'll tax the rich, all right, but they're not going to raise anywhere near what they think. And of course, a lot of the people who are rich now won't be so rich after a few years of, socialist control. We'll destroy the wealth before we have a chance to tax it. But so the money is going to come from the Federal Reserve. It's going to be printed into existence. All of this free stuff, free education, free health care, government guaranteed high paying jobs for everybody. It's all going to come from the printing press. It's all going to be financed by inflation. So people are going to get wiped out if they don't do the right thing. And that's what we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital. We're cognizant of the risks that mainstream investment firms are completely oblivious to. You know, they were oblivious to these risks leading up to the financial crisis. They got saved by the Fed, but they still don't understand what happened in 08. And they don't understand what's going to happen. The difference is the next time the Fed's not going to be able to save them or their clients. So you've got to do the right thing now. You've got to have the right type of investments. You got to own stocks in the right industries, in the right countries. You have to own the right currencies. You have to be in gold and gold stocks, but you have to be in the right gold stocks, right? Not the wrong ones. There's a lot of stocks there that could go to zero, even if gold goes to 10,000, if you buy, you know, a mine that has no gold, right? So we understand the way to create a portfolio, given what, you know, what I think is going to happen. And, you know, by the way, gold stocks beat the S&P last year. They've beat the S&P for the last 4 years. I think this is just the beginning of a huge bull market in that sector. So people need to have exposure to that. So people should be working with my firm, because I don't think there's any other firm really out there that has my perspective and that manages money based on this outlook, this scenario. I mean, everybody else is just participating in the bubble. They don't realize it's a bubble, which is the most dangerous part about it, because, you know, they'll never get out. They'll never know, you know, when it's popped, because if you don't know you're in a bubble, you don't know that there's a pin. So you just, you know, you when it starts to come down, you just think it's an opportunity to buy more. But, you know, we are very unique. And so if you share my concerns, this is where you need to have your account. You know, so you go to Euro Pacific Capital, europac.com is our website, europac.com. And if you want to get some physical gold, you can buy gold from me at shiftgold.com. But, you know, that's what you need. You need a good portfolio of foreign assets, foreign stocks, collect dividends in foreign currencies, and own some physical gold.
And the website, by the way, is?
Europac.com for the broker-dealer, EUROPAC.com. And also my mutual funds, you can read about them on EuroPacificFunds.com. And you can actually, you know, if you do have just $2,500 to invest, you can actually buy my mutual funds directly at my website. You don't even have to open up an account at Schwab or Fidelity. You can buy it directly, you know, just filling out the online application at europacificfunds.com. So you could do that as well. And then Shift Gold for gold, just my last name, gold.com.
Okay. Okay, good. So I'll have all those links up at tomwoods.com/1590-1590. All right. Thanks, Peter. Who knows? I may knock on your door and surprise you one of these days. I appreciate your time.
Well, just give me a call first. Don't just show up.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Tomorrow, Scott Horton returns to the show. And then next week, it's Walter Block week on the Tom Woods Show. Your prayers have been answered. It's Walter Block week. So make sure you have subscribed to the Tom Woods Show on tomwoods.com/apple. By the way, anybody who doesn't know who Walter Block is, he's like the most prolific libertarian scholar around. So in case this is, you know, your first exposure to the Tom Woods Show, let me just tell you, if you have 40 or 50 peer-reviewed scholarly articles to your credit as an academic, you are considered to have had a very distinguished career. Walter has published about 600. So he's had many, many careers by that metric. And he's very smart, very entertaining. He's very good at explaining things, and he's not afraid to examine controversial topics or topics on the fringe, like how should we think about outer space from a libertarian perspective, all kinds of things like that. So we're going to have some fun next week. TomWoods.com/apple. And of course, get on the only libertarian email list you would ever want to spend time reading, and that is the Tom Woods letter. Make sure you go and get that, because all the people who matter around here, they're reading that thing, my friend. You can get that over when you get my free ebook, AOC is Wrong. And that's at aociswrong.com. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.